Recording is on.
Great. And I have put a link to our agenda. So for this meeting, today we have the Solid team, and they are going to present an overview to us at 7 a.m. 3 hours ago. A bunch of the CCG team presented to the Solid community group, and we had a really great discussion. So now we get to hear about them. Okay, IP note. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreements signed. Anyone can join the CCG as long as you create a W3 account, which is free, and agree to the community license agreement. These minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call will be archived at our meeting link, and we use IRC to cue speakers during the call as well as take meeting notes in the IRC. I think most of you are there. I'll just pop a link in there. All attendees should type present plus to get your name on the attendee list in the transcript. And as I mentioned earlier, if you are new to the CCG and I don't know you, if you can put your full name and maybe a link that I can link you to, I will update our JSON file so it turns out really nice in the minutes. We use IRC to queue, and if you want to make a comment, type Q+. You can add something else to it if you want. If you're not on IRC, if you're only on audio, simply ask to be put on the queue, and I'll add you to that queue. All right, scribe selection. Do we have a volunteer for scribing? I want to say thank you to Amy Menu and Dimitri last time for scribing. Scribing is really fun. Amy, that would be really amazing if you would scribe again. Thank you so much. You get extra bonus points. Thanks for not making me go through the silence. Okay, normally do introductions and reintroductions. We'll do it. Is there anyone new on the call that would like to introduce themselves that maybe won't be speaking during the presenting? Just put Q+ or just unmute yourself and speak. Let me give you the IRC, Tim. Here you go. Okay, great. Well, I guess we'll just go ahead and get started with the main event today, since we want to have plenty of time. Sarvan, am I handing it over to you, or am I handing it over to someone else on your side?
Can start, yeah.
Yes, great. Please.
Okay, great. Thank you. So thanks again for the earlier session and sharing some of your work. I realized that it was just the tip of all the great work that you have, and there we probably need a lot more sessions to pull more information out of you. And thanks again for Heather and the Credentials Group for reaching out and organizing these meetings. So I think I speak on behalf of everybody. I hope that there'll be a lot more of these meetings and try to figure out how we can best coordinate the efforts, because there's quite a bit of shared interest. So maybe a brief intro about me, and I'll transition to the community group, which also has to do with the work itself anyway. But so I'm Sarvan Kapdisli, and I've been working on open web standards for about 15 years. Mostly through the W3C. It's interesting, earlier we were talking with Manu and how our paths have crossed over the years, even going back to those days, proto standards, if you will, and just, over the years, just coming across our work, and here we are. And what's great about these meetings is that, you know, you, for those that are new to these meetings, you'll probably, you know, maybe the first time you're meeting here, but you'll probably hear that work in the future. So it's great. So I've been focusing mostly on this thought project since 2015 at MIT, as part of my research. And actually at MIT/W3C, where I work with Amy Guy and Dimitri Zagudu and Tim Berners-Lee, I'll just refer to Tim as Tim, which was the early, as part of the early incubation period of the SOLID project, quote unquote SOLID, as that we know today. I'll get to the background in a moment. And so we've been focusing mostly on research and development, especially servers and applications. We managed to transition some of that work, for example, linked identifications through the W3C social networking group, which became a recommendation in 2017. LDN also is quite central to the ActivityPub specification and the whole Fediverse, if you will, as well as SOLID, of course. So a brief history about the SOLID community group, and Tim and Henry will fill in the gaps, and they'll actually dive more into the technical background on this. I'll just give an overview for those that are not familiar with the SOLID community group. So it is relatively new, formed in 2018, but the underlying work that we use today goes back further, around 15 years, if not longer. There are about 200 members. We primarily work through GitHub and use Gitter Chat. We also have a forum. So there are regular topical meetings covering authentication, authorization, data interoperability. We have others, but some of them faded away, but we'll probably bring them up as we actually have more focused work to do there. So everyone is welcome to join. They happen throughout the week. Right now there's three regular meetings, but you can join either one of those. I'll share the links here, actually. I think, you're not seeing my screen, but let me share it. I thought this was up already. You can see my screen, I hope. So this is great. One of our web pages for where we post our technical reports and all the links for the work items that we have, the repositories, expected dates, and so on are accessible from here. I think I can share it on the channel. So the community group perhaps emerged out of works, collaborations from many community groups and working groups. It didn't just happen overnight. It is in line with the whole global initiative on decentralizing the web and empowering individuals to control data and improve social connections, if you will. As many of you may be already aware, SOLID draws a lot of background from the semantic web and linked data initiatives, read-write web, web ID, social web, just to name a few. So it's a lot of the work, existing work. We're extending the existing work out there. We now have a name for it, SOLID. It's one way of putting that work together in a meaningful way. In the group, we thought that it'd be best to share a quick introduction to some of the key components of the SOLID ecosystem. We can use the second half of the session for open discussions and perhaps identify some few possible areas to collaborate on. I think we already did that in the last session, which was great. Hopefully we can do a bit more, continue that in this session and I assume after the meeting. So soon Tim will, he's joined us already. He will give an overview on the SOLID vision and the ecosystem. And then Aaron Coburn will introduce the SOLID OIDC specification as a way of for entities to authenticate Then Justin Bingham will follow on solid application, interoperability, and shape trees. Then Henry Story will give us a wide perspective on some of the key aspects of solid and the history there, touching on WebID protocols, authorization, and we'll speak about potential integration with all the credentials stack. So I will click mute in about a second and ask Tim to... Okay.
Hi. So hey, good to see you all. Some faces I haven't seen for a while. And good to be at a meeting of two WPC working groups, especially when somebody has sent me a really nice travel mug to for my incarceration in the UK, where I've been living for a long time now. Solid is, in a way, it comes from lots of places. And so when I explain that, I start off in different places depending on who I'm explaining to it to. To a certain extent, you've heard a lot of people talking about decentralizing the web, but it's not about blockchain. It's about, in a way, going back. So when the web was exciting, when everybody could get their own, have their own website, and you did it, if you were sufficiently geeky, you buy a computer, you put web software on it, you plug it, you get an internet connection, you plug your computer to the world, into the wall, and your people would be reading your blog, and you could blog and you could link to other people's blogs. And so that, the excitement of that, of the time was very much of being individually people being empowered. And also the whole, the wider unintended consequences of it were generally good, because you spend your time working on your blog, you make a really nice blog, and you also make sure that the links in your blog were to really nice blogs. And that result was you found that the blogosphere became a really amazing place, and you felt privileged to be a part of it, and you found that the amount of value that you put out of it compared to the amount of value you put in was huge. And people talked about the economics of the long tail and this sort of thing. Now it's true. Now we got long tail has gone, because a lot of people on the web, they're actually not on the web. They're on one single social network. But there's been a bunch of projects which have always felt, and people, there's been a spirit that we should be able to let's get back to that virtuous circle, that feeling of empowerment, where I'm on the web, not as a couch potato, not like as an alternative to sort of sitting in front of the TV. Now I sit in front of a web browser and watch stuff go, you know, and infinite scroll by my life. Let's make it where I'm empowered, where I can tackle problems, work with people on things, and have fun, and like music and whatever, and be empowered. And so in a way, solid to a certain extent, it's just web. It is, again, everybody has a website, but it's not so much a website. What the important part of it is, everybody has got a database. So it is a website. It is, you can put pictures on it, and you can do picture like things on it, and you're using Solid's Dockerly, you know, you can edit HTML files, but it's also got the tradition that any data file is regarded as a database. So whereas with slower moving synchronizing things like sort of Dropbox and Git and so on, you can synchronize data files with Solid, that we split the world so that we've got this fast protocol between, we have the apps on the top and the pod, the solid pod, the storage on the bottom, and the solid protocol defines the boundary between them. And the solid protocol allows fast interactions and collaborative interactions. So that if I'm typing something into a note, or I'm dragging something around a map, then while I'm dragging it around the map, every time I move the pointer on the map, then the server will be, the app sends back to the server, to the solid pod, every update. And also, if you're looking at the same map, And then your app will connect to the server and get high-speed notifications over hundreds of milliseconds so that we can do we are in sync and we can collaborate efficiently by with whichever solid app it is. So, we filled in the blue sky folks, sort of tried to write up what solid was, they sort of tried to think about what sort of app it was. I suppose, the trouble is it's not an app, it's a platform. And so you can put lots of apps on top of it. We're aiming that the apps should be fast. They should be compatible. Obviously, that means we need for every type of application. It means that we have to have application standards for contacts, for photos, for metadata, for playlists, for all that stuff. Fortunately, of course, there's a lot of stuff out there already when it comes to calendars and so on, and contacts and so on. It's linked data. It is unashamedly linked data. Files on a solid server are Turtle. Turtle is very like JSON, except the vocabulary is for historical reason. The actual punctuation you use is different, and it is natively RDF. So it's very easy to write a piece of RDF in Turtle, and hopefully to read a piece of RDF in Turtle, but you can also use linked, you can use JSON LD, which is sort of equivalent and compatible and interchangeable. So the solid protocol consists, the first thing it added, is single sign on for the entire world. If you want to be able to collaborate with other people, then you've got to be able to share anything with anybody. That's the goal of Solid, is you should be able to share. At the moment, you can only share sort of Facebook things with Facebook people and LinkedIn things with LinkedIn people. And the goal of Solid is to be able to share anything with anybody. No matter any group, any whatever, wherever somebody has got their ID, they can create, we can put them in any group, and anybody can publish a group. It's just a data document, a list of people by their IDs. Everybody's ID starts with https://. Groups, everything, like the fundamental principles, like people and organizations have web IDs, we call them, which are just HTTPS URLs. But everything else does. You're a meeting, a chat, one message in a chat, the action of liking a message in a chat. These all have URLs which start with HTTPS. It's pretty nice and simple from my point of view. So we started off originally, historically, I don't know, Henry might talk about this. We used a thing, our ID system was called WebID TLS, where we used, you had to log in with a certificate on your browser. I like that because I thought it was pretty secure. I don't like passwords now, but the world moved to OIDC Connect. No IDC, so now we are IDC Connect compatible. We have got a project to be, and so any solid, you can log into any solid server with an ID identity from any other, from any solid identity provider. If you typically get a solid account, you get an ID and a port at the same time. That's the simplest way to do it. But you can have several IDs. You can not tell people that they represent the same people. You can have two interesting cases. Our solid ID, which doesn't have a picture or has an avatar, an anonymous avatar, and an anonymous pseudonym. If you want to be a whistleblower, then you can do all the solid things with a new ID, which is not linked to your existing ID at all. But all of the people on this call, you're professional people. So in fact, your solid ID is going to be a bit more like, the way people use LinkedIn. They're proud of it. There's only one of them. They want to make sure that when you talk to them, you go away knowing you know, check out my LinkedIn, so we want people to go around with a QR card with their solid ID on it so that people will scan that and then they'll be taken to their their one professional ID, which has got where all their reputation hangs. All their papers they published and all of the blogs that they've made can all link to that. And so when they comment, then the comment in the public chat is sort of tied to that reputation, so they're bound to be respectful in the comments. So but there are lots of other, so some people have lots of IDs. In a way, you will have pods, several pods as well, one maybe for work for, one, maybe one for home, maybe one for each of your works, maybe one for each of your homes, maybe, you decide, so that people will, I can't overestimate the sort of the lumpiness, if you like, of the SolidWorks compared with blockchain. With blockchain, everybody stores the same information. All the nodes store the same stuff. They all share storing the same stuff. And you all have to agree on the same cost of running the system. You have to agree on the same cost of, and you have to put the same effort into keeping it running, whether you're a bank or a script kiddie doing making a game, or you're somebody who wants to use a chain to buy a candy bar or something. You're all actually using this system, which is very, very consistent. Whereas Solid, everybody, you have several pods yourself. Some of them are free. Some of them are not. Some of them, maybe the bank, if you get a premium account with the bank will give you like a Solid lockbox, which will be it's expensive because you got it from the bank, but the bank take very good care of you, and they all and you store things in the bank which you want, and the bank you've agreed with the bank who's going to take over that pod when you die. So lost pods sort of lumpy, different shapes, different speed, different reliability, running different server, but all exactly running the Solid protocol. So all running the single sign-on, the same login, all running the same access control system. But we've got two versions of the access control system at the moment. The one which is sort of ubiquitous in Solid is called WAC, Web Access Control. It's been around for years, and we've tweaked it a little bit, but only a little bit. And there's another one called Access Control Policies, which are designed to be more powerful if you're something like a healthcare system, and you want to have a lot of control over what the doctors and patients do or do not want to have access to. So the protocol is single sign-on, common access control so that you can share anything with anybody, and sort of the read-write web protocol, read-write protocol. How long have I got? We have a roadmap, which is a Solid thing. Select window off screen. How do I know which is screen one or screen two, my friend? Let me guess, it's screen one. Excuse me, going through. All right. So it won't let me allow Fox developer to share screen. So that's okay.
Do you want to post a link and somebody can share it?
Let me do that. So now I click allow. Are you seeing it? Are you seeing my screen?
Not yet.
There might be a button in the bottom of the Jitsi window where we're all at. If you look in the lower left corner, there's like next to the hand, there's like a screen, and that should allow you to share your screen.
Right, but then ask me to select from a gazillion. Okay. And then disable notifications while sharing, allow. So I've gone through the allow protocol. And can you, are you still seeing me rather than my screen? Looks like it.
All right. Yeah, we're still seeing your video.
Yep. Okay. Must be a permissions problem between Firefox and, I suppose, could anybody else share the same, thing? I'll throw it into the Jitsi chat. Sarvan, maybe, for example, or, will that work? If you go to their end.
You wanted the roadmap, right?
I want the solid roadmap, yeah. So this is in fact sort of a, it's a model of roadmaps at two levels. It's got roadmap for the whole solid ecosystem. And, so click on the table view tab. All right, so these are all the things that we need, think to be part of the ecosystem. And now click on the task tab. So we get the Kanban. Thanks. The other one. Click on category first. So this is the, if you like, the solid ecosystem is designed into these layers. At the right, we have a rather bogus one with apps and verticals, which, so that is, on the left-hand side, apps and verticals is really part of the whole ecosystem. And then we have, and maybe, so developer tools should be another task tracker within the ecosystem. But then the other, then the core client functionality, the extended client functionality in the operating system core, are the, what we call the solid OS, the solid operating system. My feeling is that when real people use this, it's got to be, it's got all the functionality of, like when you get a phone or when you get a Mac, and it should be like when you get an iPhone or when you get a Mac, according to Steve Jobs. So it's very clunky at the moment, but the goal is, folks, that this is usable by real people. It's not, and when you get it, it's, and the solid operating system, you get just like you get Mac, OS, when you get a pod, you get a beautiful operating system, which is really easy to use. It's really intuitive. It's easy to do easy, simple things on, and not too difficult to do something that gets involved in easier things. Don't look at settings. This list we've got by different types of things. Somewhere in yellow, there is verifiable credentials. In the second column, in yellow, right? So if you, click on let me edit, go to edit that, you won't have edit rights probably, or something you might. But you can see, sort of diving into this particular roadmap item, this is, we call this in progress, but dealing with credentials because people have started playing with it. And we think it's something which we do. Using VCs is really important. We'll use this tracker to keep track of our progress, and when we get to, we will link we'll drag in attachments, we will drag in related documents, we will drag in implementations. When you have the GitHub address about, or whatever, of an implementation, we'll drag that in there and keep track of them. And so this is, what you're seeing is one solid app, this tracker, which I've been using myself for keeping track of incoming. If you want me to do a talk, then Amy's got a different version of this tracker for dealing with the office of Tim Berners-Lee, deal with use it for triaging all the crazy things people ask me to do. This is where I triage, and we, the community, triage all the crazy things that we want to be able to do inside of the solid project and try to prioritize them. It's like a bit like a backlog. prioritize it. So, and this is where verifiable credentials, excuse me, are currently in our roadmap. Okay, good. So the other, one other view which might be useful is the view by status. So this is the view by what part of the ecosystem it is. If you switch to the task view, task tab, then, you see we've got, stuff about communities. This is sort of to be done this month thing. This is for herding cats. We're all the cats. These are the cool cats that do open source software. And, for Solid, which is obviously there's a massive amount to do. So one thing, you know, I would influence is that, I would emphasize is that the Solid, you know, we've got the protocol there. We've got servers there, but we've only just started on the operating system and the apps. So there's huge amount to do. But on the other hand, because we've now got the servers working, we can turn a lot more attention to building the apps and building the operating system. And a lot of the things, a lot of the early low-hanging fruit for making, for getting, getting governments to give pods to their citizens, in fact, work really nicely with verifiable credentials. And so if we have verified credentials, we can use it for putting people's, driving licenses online. We can put, verifiable credentials about the fact that somebody's over 18, which doesn't really reveal their birth. But also we can use it in much more serious ways in that we can digitally sign all the apps out there. And then we can have a, use nested and linked, webs of trust where, verifiable credentials are the technology for signing things. And then solid links are the way of, managing, for example, managing my playlist of apps that I recommend you use, and then I will make could then sign that playlist, and this playlist will contain it, and it will have maybe the hash of the app, or maybe it will have in it, it'll have the ID of the person who made the app, and then anybody loading that app will make sure that the app has been signed by the person whose ID I quoted as being the author of the app, and so on. So certainly for now, lots of the lots of sort of early apps, and I think Interrupt has already done a few demonstrators with people with using verifiable credentials for basically places where a benevolent organization like a health system or a government or part of a government wants to give their people apps and pods so that they can do, because they can be enabled, be more powerful. And so VC fits it with that. So VC is a part of the things we want to do, but we have a huge amount of stuff to do. Does that make sense?
Thanks for that. Tim, we have a question from someone in the community. Can we ask it now or should we wait until the end?
I'm done with that. I think you can, I'm happy to take questions now. As probably Solomon.
So, just to be mindful of the time we have left, I'd like to make sure that, Aaron, Justin and Henry gets, five, ten minutes or so, and before we maybe switch to the questions, if that's all right?
That's fine with me.
Because we could also extend the question period anyway, I think, but I just want to make sure that they get their talks in with the key specs that we're working on right now that we thought that you'd be interested in anyway.
That sounds great. We'll wait till the end then.
Great. So I think Aaron will... go next.
Thanks all for listening.
Thank you. So I'm Aaron Coburn. I just posted a link in the chat with a link to the Solid OIDC specification. First of all, I am an engineer at Interrupt, where mostly I spend my time implementing the Solid protocol. I also work
specifically on the authentication panel where we're defining this, this authentication protocol. Thank you, first of all, for letting us, take over this meeting in a sense. And, thank you also for all of the presentations this morning. They were really useful. And I think you'll see a lot of overlap, especially in terms of what I'm describing, for authentication and, especially things like DIDs and, globally unique identifiers. Because for Solid, all of the things that Tim described, they rely on globally unique authentication systems such that you can have globally unique identifiers. You want to be able to log in through, you know, your own authentication system. And what we have described is, something that uses OpenID Connect. At a high level, what we want to do is we want to build on OpenID Connect in a way that works with and builds on those existing implementations and those existing protocols, rather than trying to depart from that and do something completely separate. Because the reality is that there's a lot of tooling out there that's mature, that's robust, and we want to be able to work with that rather than having to build out a completely new and independent authentication system. So really, Solid OIDC is just it takes OpenID Connect and it just builds a few additional pieces on top of that in ways that work with the current OpenID Connect specification. So, I'm not going to go into all the details about, what Solid OIDC is. You can read about it if you go to that link. But at a high level, a couple of really salient points are, access tokens are defined as JOTs, JWTs. And so a Solid pod is going to interact with those access tokens as JOTs. The key thing here is that there's a WebID claim. That WebID claim effectively tells your Solid pod who you are. And that WebID claim is something that is an HTTPS URL that dereferences to an RDF document. And that RDF document contains some additional metadata that can be used for validation of the token itself. This is, I think, the key area of overlap with DIDs. And I think that some continued conversation between our two groups will be really, really productive going forward. There are other parts of this about things related to proof of possession. And, because one of the challenges with a really decentralized, system that uses access tokens, especially bearer tokens, is, if you send your bearer token to one server and that server may be malicious, these bearer tokens can be passed on to other systems, and you may unwittingly be giving away access to your own private data. So we use something called DPOP, the demonstration of proof of possession at the application layer, which is really a way of doing token binding for these access tokens. It's currently in a draft specification there. Again, we can go into more detail on that if there's need, but at a high level, that's kind of really what we're doing with Solid OIDC. I don't want to go into too much more detail, just mindful of the time. And I'm happy to take questions afterwards.
Great. Thank you, Aaron. Justin.
All right. I just put together some slides so people could have a reference point. I'm going to try to get through this at lightning speed, just given the time remaining. Just as a quick check, can people see the you should be seeing a gray slide that's a Solid application interoperability?
Yes.
Yep. Fantastic. All right. So essentially, the current state of the world that we're all aware of is it looks a lot like this. So the user down at the bottom are using applications on their computer, their mobile device, on the web. They have wearables, and you're interfacing with all these services up top that are all like little silos. And, you know, your data are those little dots in those silos. You know, there's, you know, it's very hard for that person to make use of all that data because of all the walls between them, and explicit integration is unlikely. So the vision of Solid, as Tim, said earlier, is really to give people control of their data, effectively bring all of those dots down into a personal, you know, online data store so that they can choose the applications and services that they want to use with it and be able to put that data to work on their behalf. There was a question earlier about, you know, where is that physically stored? Well, effectively, think of this view as a virtual pod. It could be made up of a number of physical pods that's effectively transparent to the services and applications that are in use, as Tim mentioned. So ultimately, we want to shift the equation to look like this. Those different applications and services are essentially reading and writing data from the store that's in control of the user. And they're ultimately, you know, the user is in control of how that gets used. And those services get the added benefit of being able to read and write the same data or have overlaps in the data they're interfacing with. And if they can make a strong proposition to the user about why they should have it, because they can deliver a better value, they could actually get access to more data, you know, more dots. But that immediately introduces some challenges that you have to solve for if you want to be able to do this practically. And, you know, the goals that we've had, and we've been doing this work principally in the interoperability panel in Solid, is that you then have to solve these problems. So you've got to allow different applications to be able to seamlessly read and write the same data. Different applications written by people that aren't necessarily working together or don't, you know, have knowledge of exactly how the other one works, just knowing that they want to read and write and access the same data without breaking it. And that's pretty hard to do on its own. But when you introduce security and collaborative use, meaning certain people or applications are authorized to access some data that others aren't, it becomes even harder. And you want, given all that, you've got to make this easy for people to use. So you want people to be able to safely share even complex data, like, you know, health data or financial data, with other people and applications in a very simple, intuitive way. You don't want to require them to have to think about how to organize their data to be able to do that. Certainly you could if you want to. But if you're on your mobile phone, you don't want to be making those choices. You just want to say, I want to use this service and I'm going to give it access to it, and it all happens transparently. And when you grant access, it should be exactly the right amount of access that that application or person needs every time, no more, no less. So a lot of the output of the work that we've been doing towards this over the last couple of years are kind of manifested in a couple of specifications, the Shapetree specification and the application interoperability specification. I'm going to explain kind of what this does in a story in a second. But effectively, shape trees is a way to model information so it can be really interoperable. And the interoperability spec is about how to provide some patterns for actors in the ecosystem to do that exchange in a constructive way. So it's really easiest to explain this, especially given that, you know, I've probably just got a handful of minutes left, to just take you through a quick workflow. I'm pretty much just going to dip my toe in a couple of things that we're doing. But if you're interested, join some of our meetings. We meet every week. And I'm also, from the session this morning, going to start joining some of the confidential store discussions to talk about it. So in our story, we have Bob. And Bob is storing a bunch of different kinds of data in his pod. And the first thing that the interoperability spec tries to focus on is data registration, a pattern for how you store your data in a pod so that you don't have to think about how to store it, or you don't have to think about necessarily hierarchies or how to put it in certain places so that it can be authorized. So I'm going to dive into this because it's also going to explain a bit about how it satisfies the goals in Shapetrees. So we got towards wanting to work towards more of a flatter data organization scheme, because to satisfy those goals I talked about up front, you don't want to have to think about where to put things, meaning you need some consistent pattern to apply in those cases. And you want to try to make it as simple as possible. So the simplest way to do it is to store data based on what it is. So in this set over here on the right, you effectively have instances of these things, calendars, events, projects, that are stored in collections or containers, as we call them in Solid. Now the other thing is that these data, it's each one of these is a thing that a person would understand. If you said, can I share this project with you? You'd understand what that meant, even if you don't understand how it's organized kind of down below. Additionally, it makes it much easier to validate that something is, you know, conform it to say a given schema or shape. If you're just saying, if you put something in here, it's going to validate against this. So, similarly, this consistent organization scheme makes it much easier for us to establish consistent authorization schemes. So data can, be easily authorized and it can stay where it is. Now there's two issues then that you have to contend with. One, some of these individual things are complex on their own. Like an instance of a task can actually be made up of multiple resources and multiple shapes or schemas. And we need a way to represent that. And then furthermore, some of these things that could be complex on their own could be part of bigger complex things. So a task is part of a project as well as issues and releases. And we need a way to be able to deal with that. So this is where Shapetrees came in. There's a spec I referenced before. I'm just going to quickly explain this, and then we're going to get on. So the idea behind a Shapetree is that it allows you to effectively marry the graph into the way that it's stored in a collection or even in nested hierarchies, so that you can get machine-to-machine interoperability. It gives you structure as well as validation criteria or schemas. So a shape tree helps you with the layout as well as how to validate what the thing is. Each shape tree, because it's explaining a structure, also gives you a boundary with which to authorize that data. So that helps us. If you see up there, a task, you know, as represented by a shape tree, it's actually combined of multiple resources, both metadata, you know, RDF that can be validated as well as binary. But when we get into virtual, hierarchies, it also allows us to model things virtually so that we can talk about something like a project and be able to say issues, tasks, and resources, can be made up of that, even if these things are stored flatly. Now this becomes really powerful when you start to get into consent. I probably just left you with more questions than answers on that, but again, we're in a bit of a lightning round.
Justin, so getting, yeah. Right. If we could slowly wrap up this area, because I'd like to also give Henry a chance, because we're, I think, 8 minutes left now.
Okay. So effectively, we talked about how data can be organized and validated. Once you have those schemes, it allows you to be able to share it with other people and applications. The interop spec gives you schemes for data registration, which we just talked about, app registration, and most importantly, some patterns that you can use for consent so that you can grant access to people or applications based on exactly what they need. So what that means is, an application like Acme Project is able to express its access needs to any agent that wants to use it. If you dereference the global identifier for Acme Project, you get some metadata, and this lines up the same pattern you would use with a DID. You get some metadata that says, here's the kind of access that this application or service needs. This can be presented to the user dynamically in a pretty intuitive authorization view that allows them to specify or select exactly what access they want to grant even getting down to referenced or related types. And this is using shape trees. So it's able to use that kind of virtual hierarchy to actually model fairly complex asks in an intuitive way. So you see down here, include access to related issues, tasks, and milestones. The user makes their determination. They represent that as a grant, which provides a consent record in their pod, and they deliver that back to the application using a receipt. At no point in time in that process does the application get the Acme project get access or knowledge to any of the other data that's in their pod. They just communicate that ask. That ask is presented to the user using an application that they trust. And then if they make the decision, they're able to furnish that back to them. You know, I'll just kind of finish that by saying we actually have these patterns, live and in use in, using health data, which is, some of the most complicated and complex kinds of data that you can see. We're getting feedback from, real patients, and the thing that made me happiest was they said, they were blown away by how easy it was for them to share their data with other people and applications, and understand exactly what they were sharing, be able to kind of, tune that or trim that back or rescind it really easily. And, all of you guys, all of us have been working in this decentralized space for a while. Intuitive isn't usually the first thing that people, describe, based on their experience. So, we see a lot of potential for these patterns. And there's tons of potential for, I think, us to collaborate, especially in the identity hub kind of world, as we evolve them. Thanks.
Okay, great. Thank you, Justin and Henry.
All right. all right. So there's not much time left. Let me see if I can share my couple of pages. I can also.
You can stick to the allotted, I think, 10 minutes or so until someone says stop.
All right, so let me just, multiple screens up. Let me see if I can share the screen. And does that work? No, it doesn't. Or have I already done it?
We're still seeing Justin's screen. So, Justin, I don't know. Are you able to stop your screen share?
Oh, weird. Yeah, I thought I did. Let me try again.
We did have this issue one previous time with another person.
Yep. I'll log out and log back in.
Well, Henry is sharing his screen, I think.
Am I?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not. I'm just seeing the shared screen of the...
Yeah.
I'm going to bounce and come back just to be sure.
Good. Where's the all right, let me just catch this up here. This is the problem of having too many screens open. Right. Can you see the screen?
Yes.
Yes. Right.
Yep. So you can see Tim there in the middle, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm just going to go over the... I think this is great. We've had a lot of great overview. I'm just going to focus on one aspect a little bit, perhaps go over it again, pretty much what we've said. I suppose what really ties us to the credentials community group is the Web ID. Work that started in 2008 around. It was known differently, a different name, and even before. And it works quite simply. And you can see this is very similar to the DID spec. There are two URLs actually in one. There's the hash URL in red and the blue URL. The blue URL refers to a document, and the red URL refers to a person. And it does, and how does it refer? How do you know what it means? Well, you go to the document to find out a description which can contain a public key, right? in this case, using an ontology. A search ontology could be another one. This is something we could work with the credentials community group to work out kind of what ontologies for keys should we use, right? The whole point of this is, of course, as Tim and everybody was pointing out, is so that Tim can say link to his personal profile and then link to all his friends. And there's 200 of them, and they can link to their friends. And everybody put their data on these little boxes, which are pods, which can be machines in your own home, right? So this is in around 2008 at Java 1, I presented an address book to read this type of stuff. It's really, as you can see, it's a pretty bad UI. I didn't have any designers to help me. And now we have a lot of people working on the UI, lots of startups and so on. This UI at the time could only do read. It could only read because we didn't have a read-write element. And people would say, well, what are we going to do with privacy? So in order to privacy, you need access control. You need authentication. And in this blog post from 2008, after asking on the ITF, we discovered that we could use client-side certificates. Now we have verifiable claims after 10 years later. And that's great. So we could in one very simple connection get a client could go to a web server, get a 200 back and get connect, get a client certificate request, and fetch the public key on the personal user's profile. Right. So that's that was very efficient. And we need this efficiency because we might need to connect to 200. Different connections at the same time. So even though it was efficient, though, there's lots of problems. One of them was that the clients, if you did connect to 200 websites simultaneously, you get 200 certificates pop up. So that wasn't so good. We also don't want just protection. We also want the apps to read and write. So we, in 2015, the linked data platform came out. That's now integrated into Solid. That allows the read and write. That's building on Atom protocol, which I worked on, and before that on WebDAV, which Microsoft worked on. So these things evolving constantly. And in order to understand access control, once you have authentication, you need each resource on the web to point to an access control resource, which describes who can access, right? So one of the first ones here is public. And this is used by the server and by the client. You can use it both ways, but the client can find out if it's got access, and the server can find out whether it should give access. This card from Tim links to, or from Bob here, links to a protected resource that has an ACL, which says that the protected access is in read mode. And the people it's giving access to is some group that's specified at some conference, for example. So this is very, very flexible, linked data kind of work. This is, of course, evolving. This is from the wiki from 2010, 12, around that. Some of the first work on web access control was around there. The web ID TLS work kind of went out of the fell out, and because as Chrome removed the key piece, which is the key gen certificate part, which allowed us to create certificates easily. I remember Manu Sporny showing us his credential stuff very early on. That was before this was removed, so I was still hoping that the browsers would do the right thing. It looks like it was at the wrong layer of the TLS stack. So the nice thing is that we have, if we look at Manu Sporny's work here from 2019. This is the 12th version of the HTTP signature spec, which is now taken over by the ITF working group, HTTP working group. It has a way of signing messages, and it has a way of signing of authenticating with that at the HTTP layer. So. You could add a WW authenticate signature and use that to authenticate. And that was went through 12 generations. So now this is at the ITF, but they removed this piece, which allows authentication. So that's kind of why I've been working on trying to see how we can get Manu's work back in by adding back by using the signing HTTP message from RFC and adding that back. So, you know, that should be HTTP signature, not HTTPS. And that gives us back the same efficiency that we had with TLS. So we can do, you can do a request on a resource. So don't forget, these clients are going to do requests on resources around the web. Each resource can be protected. It's not like you're protecting the whole website against something. You have resources protected saying this is, these people, this, this picture can be seen by my friends. This picture can be seen by my work, colleagues and so on. And so you have this WW Authenticate, which can come back, and you can use HTTP signature to sign a header, pass a key in there, like here. Perhaps oh, this is the unauthorized. It's linking to the ACL. The client can find out whether it wants to give access, and then you can use authorization HTTP sig. You can do a request. Sign some headers, and you're and you have the again the efficiency of TLS, but now at the right level. You can add credentials in this system too, because you can have you could have a credentials URI passed in into the HTTP signature, and that could be on the server. It can be on your pod. It could be also with peer-to-peer extension to HTTP, which is a draft, which I think I'm just pointing out here because it's really cool. It would, from 2015, it would allow you to place the certificate on your client and have the server request it directly on the same connection. So there's all kinds of fun things that can be done there. And one of the things I want to point out is that you can have, you can use OWL, the specs from the W3C, to describe, for the ACLs to describe, say here, people over 21. And then you can have, you can say that, you can call this over 21, and you can say that all content that is adult content is, can be read by the class of ISO over 21, right? So that's, you can have very, very flexible attribute-based access control if we, so this is work that's just starting, that's going on now, which we would like to, of course, work with the credentials group, because with credentials, you want to be able to then present credentials over a certain age and things like that. So that's, if you think about how do these credentials all fit together, right at the end of this, I've thought about how you could build what the credentials people now call governance. It's a key term in the book Self-Sovereign Identity. In order for that to work at a global level, you'd need something like a web of nations. You'd need every nation to connect together, point out which are the people that can give out credentials for age, for driver's licenses, and so on, so that people don't individually need, servers and pods don't individually need to know which agency in Japan, in China, in France is allowed to give out driver's licenses. So that's, there's a lot of work to be done there clearly, and that's, I just want to give some picture of where it could go. That's my personal view, but I've been working on it for 13 years, half the time Tim has done, so, let me see where the. So I think that's that for me.
Great, thanks, Henry. Should we transition to questions?
Yeah, that'd be great. Do you? I'm happy to run the queue.
Oh, by all means, please.
Okay, so first up, we have Adrian. We can barely hear you, Adrian.
Okay, how about now? Let me try speaking louder.
It's a little bit better.
it's an easy question. In the model where there is a separation between a policy decision point and a policy enforcement point, how have pods incorporated that, especially for privacy reasons? In other words, if I as a patient don't want to share my policies with that hospital.
I missed the beginning of the question.
I can try louder. In the slides, there's a separation between the policy decision point and the policy enforcement point. So he was asking about the case where there is a, where you've got sensitive policies and you want to not share them with, for instance, a hospital that's going to be enforcing your policy decisions. Did I do that justice?
Yes, you did.
So it sounds as though if you don't trust the hospital, which we're with your, then you can take a copy of the data on another pod, which you run yourself, which the hospital is not involved in running, and then you can allow people to access it through there. So presumably you want, for example, this is reasonable, so you want to share it with friends and family, and you don't want the hospital to know who your friends and family are. And you don't trust them. I think a lot of people would trust the hospitals in the UK to know who their friends and family are, but you could certainly think things have more than one pod. So you might have it on one pod, which you share with the hospital, you have a copy of it on another pod where your private policies apply. And then you have another copy on another pod just for safety.
I think you can also have access control rules on access control rules. We haven't really looked at that. Or you could have a group that's secured. So you could say all members of this group can access this resource, but only members of the group can see who is a member of the group, because the group is access controlled to only members of the group. And then you'd ask, how would anybody know who's a member of the group? Well, they'd have to get an invitation. So I think there's lots of possible ways of dealing with situations like this. And of course, perhaps the credentials group have extra new ways we can use.
Okay, great. Thanks. Manu, you're up next.
Yeah, I just wanted to extend a big thank you to each of you. Thanks, Tim and Sarvin and Henry and all the rest of the Solid folks for joining us on the call today. It's been really great seeing, where Solid is these days. There are clearly many places where we overlap. Meaning that the two communities, the core philosophy is very aligned. The technologies that we're using, are highly aligned. And I can see absolutely, pieces that one community is working on that the other one might not be, or areas where we're kind of sort of working on the same thing and we should collaborate more. So just as a kind of a proposal for next steps, I think it would be useful for at least the people that have a good idea of the roadmap for each project, to get together and decide what pieces overlap, what, pieces, one entity needs that the other one may have, so that we can kind of triage all these technologies that we're working on and figure out how they fit in. Because ideally, these are two very large communities, ideally we can accelerate the work by, dividing and conquering on a number of the technologies. So that's my ask to kind of the leaders in both groups, is to sit down and let's figure out a way to do that triage, so that we can get more organized about who's working on what.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, I like that, Manu. I will happily do some follow-up with folks on coordinating that. Elf Pavlik, you're on the queue. And I am going to, we have Michael Herman on there. And so I think I'm going to, if you want to get on the queue, do it now. Otherwise, I'm going to close the queue. So we'll just take these last two questions. So, Pavlik, you're up.
So we work across a few different panels. For example, in authorization panel, we have pretty well documented use cases and requirements now derived from those use cases. I think that would be possibly one of the interesting points to see the overlap. Also, if you have your use cases and requirements documented, for example, Henry was describing one of the proposals, like focusing on HTTP signatures. But at this moment, it's quite open and there are different proposals. Some ones are more OAuth kind of base or NAP protocol, which is kind of now iteration or like the next kind of successor of OAuth possibly. And we also like look at the user managed access, UMA2, and how the claims gathering work over there and how the credentials could be used. So I just want to say that some things are still quite open and we explore different ways of approaching that. So again, Henry presented the one that he's championing, but it's not that it's kind of closed how we want to approach those things. Some of them are still flexible to maybe be inspired by your work and other works. And yeah, there's options to how we can solve those problems. We are not necessarily always committed to one possible solution.
Yeah, thanks. I think that these two meetings we've had today have really been a lot of food for thought for both sides. And I think we have some clear, you know, there's some clear places where it makes sense for us to, you know, start a potential collaboration engagement, but that's just like the known stuff. I think, and one of the reasons why I really wanted to encourage like these two meetings is because, to help us facilitate collaboration among the unknown stuff, the stuff that's still like emerging in these spaces, to see if there's at some point like the technologies or the ideas and the concepts can somehow align or get braided while still keeping their integrity. Michael, your last question. So after that, we'll conclude. You're up.
Okay. So my interest is in fully decentralized platforms or fully decentralized solutions. And so for the past couple of weeks, I've been working on this idea of decentralized Twitter and what it would look like. So Solid, like the confidential storage spec, is a server-based secure storage solution, both the pods and the data vaults. Can you comment on, like, you know, if I want my pod running on my phone, as a secure storage resource, can you comment whether you see that in the future or is that just not in the scope? How does Solid view on device secure storage?
Yes, we certainly have a lot of early interest we've got for people giving people the pod foot primarily on their phone. Obviously, you have to think about how to back it up and so on. And you can have a pod in various different places and you can synchronize it between that. You might be interested in looking at the work that people have done. We say everything starts with HTTPS so that people understand how it works. You can follow links, but you can also put all kinds of, you could use other protocols as well, like IPFS, for example. And there's been the safe decentralized network. Those folks have put in the effort to build a version of Solid which runs on a sort of a Solid client stack that will access either HTTPS or safe with the safe colon. You can sort of link between them, and then the whole safe world is completely decentralized. Obviously, it's decentralized in the sense of being scattered everywhere, whereas the solid world is decentralized but lumpy. Does that make sense? So lots of ways of connecting together, of using if you have a favorite decentralized file system, for example, plugging that in obviously is very straightforward. You do have to, it does have to support URLs. You have to be able to link to it. And you have to be able to give us code for the way. If you give us one of these links, we can put that code in our systems to look it up.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, everyone, for staying over. Thanks, Sarvan. Thank you, Tim Berners-Lee, for coming to our Credentials Community Group and telling us about Solid. We've been very interested about it for a while. Thanks to all of the Solid presenters, and extra special thanks to Amy Guy, who described this meeting, which amazing job catching all the nuances and no typos, and also the meeting earlier today, too. And we'll be back next week with a regular CCG meeting. I will do a follow-up either on the CCG list and with various folks and connect with Sarvan to understand who from the Solid side it makes sense for us to do next steps. And as well, I invite the Solid folks to email the CCG list and let us know when you're meeting and how we can join. And if you're on the Solid side and you want to join our regular meeting or any of our task forces, we have all those notifications on our list as well. I'm also personally available. You can reach out to me if you need any help figuring out who to connect with or who to talk to. And I'm Heather Vescent at Gmail, or you can just find me Heather Vescent everywhere on the web. And again, Manu, thank you so much for all your work. Thanks, everyone, for all this long-time work. Thanks for your time today, and we will conclude the meeting.
Thank you, Heather.
Great. Thank you, Heather. Manu, CCG, everybody.